Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. And I'm net control operator for this Alimark technical net. It's been going strong for over 45 years. And every Sunday night, it's around 8 o'clock. We sit in front of our radios and we chat with each other. We teach each other. We learn from each other. And hopefully we entertain each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we will try to do it all over again. Let me drop right here. Give you the usual links. Okay, if you would like to reach me via email, my email address for the purpose of this technical net is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you would like to contact Paul about NASA or space-related stories and see if he has an angle on it, you can reach him via the email address spacenetreport@gmail.com. We also offer a link page. I read a whole bunch of articles on the Internet. I look at YouTube. If I find something interesting, I cut and paste it to a link page, and I publish the link page guys. I guess I got thrown off of All-Star rather early tonight. Anyway, I was mentioning my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Paul's email address, if you want to contact him and ask him a NASA or space-related story, is spacenetreport@gmail.com. We offer a link page of interesting articles at roy.ac2gs.com. We offer an audio stream on the Internet of the technical net at technet.ac2gs.com. And we always like to remind people that Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive site called amateurradio.tv. It has archives of the Alimark technical net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who have passed away or just moved away. It's all still very, very useful information. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we've got planned for tonight. Okay, standard operating technical net. I have a couple of little comments to make about artificial intelligence, and then I'll let people respond. Then we'll go into the main segment of questions, comments, and topics for discussion. I hope that the people will hit their push to talk and give me their first name and their call sign, whether it's amateur radio-related questions or comments or science and technology. I would prefer the amateur radio stuff to go first because this is an amateur radio net. But I'm open to any discussion of science and technology, and certainly artificial intelligence will come up in the conversation, no doubt. Amateur radio, hopefully first, science technology second, and if you have a longer presentation, try and keep that until the very end of the list so that the people who just want to ask a question and move on don't have to way too long. That should take us hopefully to about 10:15. Paul WS2N will join us for the SpaceNet report, and that should take us all the way to 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything. Wish you well for the coming week. So that's the plan if everything goes to plan. if I don't get thrown off of All-Star, although chances are I will at least one more time tonight, but hopefully it'll be a quick and easy recovery. As long as, you know, I work, the Shaq work, the Rafita work, you know, hopefully we'll have a very interesting night. Maybe we'll learn some things and maybe we'll be entertained. We'll see what happens. Anyway, with all that in mind, let me drop again, and I will tell you a couple of little stories about AI for the past week. Okay, there's a bunch of things about, you know, point one re-releases or tweaks on AI programs that may improve some specialty features, but I don't think we'll dwell on that too much, because this past week it's been very strange. There's been a slew of kind of announcements. It started with Anthropic. They released a public release article about a new model that they call Anthropic Mythos. And the way they presented it was that they have this new, very powerful iteration, but they're not going to release it because, number one, it's very dangerous. It is a very powerful one. So they're only going to release it to a couple of top 10 IT companies, and it would be too expensive as well. So it's, you know, the bottom line is apparently none of us are going to see Mythos, except it's going to become a Mythos. In reaction, of course, Altman announced that OpenAI has something equally scary. It doesn't have a name yet, and he has no particular proof that it exists, but he just needed to respond to the Anthropic response, and so he said that they have something really dangerous, too. And weirdly, Meta said that they have a new iteration in AI, but it's too early for them to really explain it to anyone. So a lot of announcements, almost no information. When you dig deep into Anthropic's Mythos, it seems that the scary aspect is that it's able to detect flaws in software and open them up for attack. This is not uncommon, strangely. You know, zero-day reveals of problems in code that allows nasty people to break into your system have been around for decades, and artificial intelligence that's able to detect some of these flaws have been around for at least a year or two. So the big question that some people have is this just public relations nonsense, or is this to be taken seriously? I would suggest don't take it too seriously at this point, because if you read really into the nitty-gritty, the small print, they also mentioned that it's not really that much of an iterative advance. It doesn't have, other than these fears that they're throwing around, it doesn't seem to be that particularly special. So I wouldn't, you know, consider investing a lot in Anthropic just based on the Mythos model. Again, I'm a little concerned that they chose Mythos as the name for it, because it seems to be mythological. Anyway, that's the big news in AI this week. Anthropic Mythos, a lot has been written. There's a lot of YouTube. There are YouTubes where people are very frightened, and other where they're very disgusted, and they're getting tired of these public relations schemes of marketers. Just check that I'm still connected. Okay, I'm still connected. So, anyone with any comments or questions about the AI stories I mentioned?
I have an AI question. Feather City to the doomsday scenario. And it was found that major can identify the zero day vulnerabilities in every major operating system and browser. How do you understand or interpret that?
Well, number one, you doubled with 60 seconds. As I said before, in reality, previous AI models have been able to accomplish that as well. It's not particularly that awe-inspiring. It's kind of curious to me why they kind of focused on this model, even though older models have been known to do the same exact thing. That's just an aspect. The code is very flawed, and there's a lot of flaws in them, and there's a lot of different ways to detect them. So again, it strikes me as too much PR buzz. You know, it's not quite as important as the public release would suggest.
That's right, KB.
Yes, recognize. Do you have a comment?
Just listening, brother. Thank you for doing what you do, Ray, KB2SNC. Just going to monitor and listen. Thank you.
Okay, very well. Sit back and enjoy. If you have anything to say, feel free. So, Wesley, what's your response?
Is it just the oldest thinking the word money? They say they refuse the public release of the model, opting instead for Project Glasswing. And it looks like Google, Amazon, Apple, and NVIDIA is involved in it. Back to your intuition.
Well, it's not exactly that they're involved in it. It's simply that that Anthropic offered them access. And they also, this particular model has, I think it has a trillion parameters, so it's rather expensive to run. So, you know, Anthropic has to pay the bill because they haven't found anyone crazy enough to actually pay the actual compute price. So they contacted Microsoft and Amazon and a bunch of other companies, and they say, we have a new iteration. We'd like to let you play with it. And they say, okay, that's all that is. So, again, it's more publicity than it is substantial. This is artificial general intelligence that they've all been clamoring for. This is not the God computer. This is just a iteration of previous Anthropic models, as far as I can perceive.
Do you mean by that they are, it looks like they are trying to be taller than they are, more important, more powerful, trying to create some sort of doomsday scenario for cyber security that Mythos, their product, might represent back to you?
I think they're one of a few guys who are in a hole for almost $1 trillion. They're looking forward to an IPO, and the economy is kind of creaking like it's going to fall apart any second, and they really want to get their stock out there and sold for $1 trillion and want to make back all the money that they loaned before they go bankrupt and end up in jail. So I think all these guys, all these techno pros who have invested high billions, almost $1 trillion into AI and see no real profit coming back unless you can talk some crazy people in the stock market into paying you $1 trillion for your company that's of dubious value. They're all doing it. Elon is doing it, particularly with SpaceX mixed into the into his artificial intelligence company. But you know, they're all in a big hole. Oracle is frightened. They're firing a lot of employees. Their stock value is plummeting. They're in a very, very precarious position. They're running out of people who will lend them money. They need people to just give them money. And so everyone has to kind of differentiate themselves and seem to be the latest, greatest AI model available because they want the money. And, you know, not everyone's gonna waste $1 trillion on every single AI stock. There's going to be some winners, maybe, and there'll be definitely some losers.
Thank you very much. I think that I've got the message the right way, and I agree with you, Frank Tracy.
K2STP.
Yes, Chris.
Good evening, Roy. I agree with you. There's definitely some marketing going on for the stock or any or whatever. However, the one thing I can say security experts are concerned with, and I agree with it, is the leak involves about 500,000 lines of code, and that code is some stuff we do not want out there. And not because of what the code can do, but a lot of people can learn from that code and modify it, learn, you know, new ways of hacking and whatnot. And I think they're more concerned about that than what the actual code release or leak, what it can do. It's more about there's a lot of code you can look at and, you know, start figuring things out that you didn't know prior. And I think that's what they're concerned with. But, you know, you're definitely right about the rest of it, for sure. Who knows what's really going on, but I don't like the fact that that code's out there. That's not a good thing under any circumstance. K2STP.
AC2GS. Yeah, well, that's actually a completely separate story that I forgot to include, because it's not Anthropic's Mythos that was released. It was some additional code. I think it's called Saddle Code. You know better than me, Chris, right? Is it Saddle? It's a strange term for this type of software addition. It sits on top of the AI model.
That code, I did read something that explained it. I don't remember what it was, but I thought it was involved with Anthropics that actually leaked the code. It wasn't?
Yeah, it was Anthropic, but it wasn't the Anthropic Mythos. The Mythos is the AI module. What they released, for some reason, they haven't really explained it, is an additional piece of software that goes on top of any artificial intelligence model. You could put it on OpenAI's AI module. It's the way it changes prompts and adjusts things. So it's an additional piece of software on top of the AI. It doesn't contain any of the parameters, as far as I'm aware. And it's unsure to me whether it was released accidentally or on purpose. Usually, making things open source. You know, I mean, back in the old days, OpenAI was supposed to be open source. Was conceived of as a good thing because a lot of people pounded on code, the sooner they found the flaws and the sooner they fixed them. So you could make a case either way for open sourcing the additional Saddle code that was released from Anthropic. But that's a separate entity, as far as I'm aware, from Mythos. Mythos is an actual AI iteration with a trillion parameters as opposed to material that was open source that didn't really include parameters because it was a add-on to just any old AI, but that was Anthropic's version of it.
Yeah, that's correct, but that's what's concerning. It doesn't matter if it's the AI portion of it. It's the layman terms, hacking portion of it, and what it can do, and it can teach people a lot of stuff we don't want people knowing, and that's what's bad about it. And yeah, whether it's the AI or it sits on AI, it doesn't really matter. It's very bad code that we don't want out there. And the leak was definitely on accident. It was more of a hack, really. Somebody was hacked, and it was stolen from their PC. So it's definitely not a good thing, and we don't want that code out there. Afterwards, did it become... that part I don't know. Certainly sounds valid and would make a lot of sense, because it'll do exactly what you would want it to do. But having that code out there is very bad. Not a good thing.
Okay, I didn't really bother to look at it. Apparently someone translated it into Python, so it made it a little bit more universal for most guys who hack. But, I mean, you believe in open source software, don't you? I mean, OpenAI was supposed to be open source. So at what point did it go from being a good thing to being a terrible, dangerous thing?
It's the point when the point of that code was to do nothing but look for hacking, let's call it. And, it's looking for back doors, let's just say. But it does a lot more than that. It can create doors, so things that don't exist, and recreate them. And it's very, very bad code, let's just say that. Open source is great when the code is doing good things and we can work with it and modify it and add to it and get it to the rest of the world. That's fantastic, but not in this case. We don't want people modifying this, looking at it, learning from it, using it, changing it, nothing. We don't want it out there, period. It's not good.
Okay, but unfortunately, once it's out, it's out. You can't put it back in the box. This is the old story of that magic box. That once released, it's out there. It's all over the damn place. It's too late to do anything about it. You just have to deal with it as best we can. It's one of the many, many problematic aspects of artificial intelligence that will only get more problematic over time. It won't get less.
Absolutely agreed. And, it's similar to the ransomware outbreak that happened to me. Finally is smoothed out recently. That lasted for quite a while if you really look back at the history of it. That ransomware was very similar to this. It started when it leaked somewhere, and then people got a hold of it, and it became open source, and then it became a really nice package for hacking and closing ransomware, and that's kind of how all that thing started. And it took us a long time, security-wise, software-wise, to get over that and lock things down so that code no longer really works. Or does anything, because everything's locked down for what it did. But this is now a new version, and security companies are going to be scrambling trying to lock this one down. K2SD, back to you.
Okay, very good. Yeah, ransomware has an interesting story. I mean, it's not only script kiddies. There was a time that they just kind of released little kits where anyone with a vague idea of how to use computers could wreak havoc. It kind of developed into an interesting business model. There were groups of hackers that maintained these ransomware software packages, and other people would go to them, and they'd get the software, and they'd return a percentage of the ransom to the gang that actually maintained the software. So it was kind of two levels of technology. The smart guys maintained the code and took a percentage, and the script kiddies did the in-your-face kind of work, and if they got caught, it was more likely they got screwed. So, I mean, thankfully, that's kind of become limited. A lot of software has fixed those flaws. They were wreaking havoc on industry. There was supposed to be some high-minded rules that you couldn't attack hospitals or medical services, but those guys blew right through past that and wreaked havoc on medical records and all manner of things. So, yeah, I'm glad that's gone. I hope it doesn't return. But, you know, it's always these types of battles back and forth that I mentioned to people. If you ever have these snippers on your computers that you connect to the Internet, once you connect your computer, your simple little computer to the Internet, there are going to be port snippers for the rest of your life as long as you got the computer turned on. It's a dangerous place out there. It's a jungle. And, you know, if you don't protect yourself, you will get burnt. So, computers are a great service, but they're also a terrible weapon. As I said before, you know, a hammer is a great thing. You can build a house or you can bash your neighbor's skull in. The same thing goes, unfortunately, with computers. So they will continue to be a source of benefit and of problems. We just have to protect ourselves as best we can. Sam, what do you want to ask?
Good evening, Roy. This is K-2-N-E. I'd like to know, where do you get your information about artificial intelligence? I mean, you are very knowledgeable, and I'm just curious about where do you pick up this information, because I know you're not making it up. Back to you.
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of people, I use the Internet a great deal. There are sources for research papers, hopefully they're not behind the paywall, because I really don't like to pay those premiums. But before I am aware that there's a paper, almost instantaneously, some very smart guys on YouTube present what the paper says. So they offer their interpretation. And if you catch a few smart people, usually their interpretations are ever so slightly different. So you can help to draw a conclusion based on the different assumptions that people make about the same material. And also, I know some guys who are just gung-ho about everything. So I try to listen to their opinion as well. I discount it a bit because some of them are actually just, some of them AI guys. You know, unfortunately, you get people who get so emotionally tied up that they start to believe that AI is alive and is a cognitive, conscious entity. And, you know, you had that poor guy, I think it was at Google, who got fired because he kept telling people that the Google AI was alive. They're not. They are able to, they're very sophisticated pieces of software that can simulate profoundly, and we tend, as human beings, tend to have a deep bias. If you can communicate in very good English, with good technical terms that don't seem to obviously be nonsense, we attach a great deal of personal consciousness to anything that's able to do that. And that's primarily the reason for AI being. It's a large language model. It's designed to be nice to us, to be supportive to us, and to impress us. And it does all those, but that doesn't mean that it's alive. It just means it's a clever algorithm. But anyway, I use different things. Textbooks would be kind of expensive and kind of out of date. So it's research papers that I learn about on the Internet, YouTubes, and the odd Internet site for IA News. At this point, there's probably about 100 or 200 sites that just collect artificial intelligence news. It's in everyone's mind, and they could make a buck off of the advertising on the website.
Thank you, Roy. I appreciate your synopsis of the sources of your information. It's very, very time-consuming, I'm sure, to do the research to come up with an understanding of what's going on. So I appreciate what you do, and I find it fascinating. By the way, I did ask my stockbroker about AI, and they are so gung-ho about it. They believe it is the future, the brokers. I don't know if they're being brainwashed by their management, but the feeling is that it's going to be huge profits, and it's very worthwhile to be invested in it. And if you're in mutual funds, you are in it one way or the other. Anyway, Roy, have a good evening. I'll be listening. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Sam. Well, I mean, that's the reason why the stock market is doing as well as it's still doing. The minute that your friends, the stockbrokers, realize that they've been cooked, then the bottom falls completely out of sync. Yeah, that's the problem. The stock market is not a rational device. It's based on the emotional responses of human beings, so it's inherently irrational. And, you go back to the dot-com bubble, and you have the same thing among stockbrokers, that they're all in. If they weren't in, the stock market wouldn't be inflated the way it is. People are talking about SpaceX being worth $2 trillion, and the AI companies at least $1 trillion. These are absurd evaluations, and I don't think they're going to pay off. Maybe they're right, and maybe I'm a fool. I don't know. It's just I've been around and I've seen this before, especially with the dot-com bubble. But there have been other bubbles, so I could totally understand why your stockbrokers believe that. I'd be confused if they didn't, because someone's keeping the price of all these tech firms up in the air when they're going deeper and deeper into debt. I mean, if there still wasn't a buzz, I think Oracle the price of Oracle stock would be much lower if Oracle would still be in business anymore with the amount of debt that they're covering.
Yes, we've been through many bubbles before, but out of it comes some truth eventually.
Well, the magic word to be very fearful of is when people say, but this time it's different. Anyway, that's my little horror story for tonight. Don't have too many nightmares. Invest wisely. I don't offer investment advice. All this is just general technological conversation, comments, and criticism. And I tend to be a little cynical about a lot of things, because they work out to be cynical. A lot of things, unfortunately, are grifts, but still, could be totally wrong. What the hell do I know? Anyway, any other comments on AI before we move into the main segment for tonight? Okay, very well. We will shift into the main segment. Anyone has any questions or comments or topics, kindly hit that push to talk. Give me your first name and your call sign. Whether it's amateur radio related or science and technology, and if you have a bunch of things and you'd like to go towards the end, let me know, and I'll just put your name towards the end of the list. So let the adventure begin.
John, November 2, Zulu Charlie, amateur related.
And to it, after everybody.
Can you
ahead, CP. I have a question.
Okay, John, Chris, and Wesley recognize. Anyone else want to put their name down? Okay, enjoy the show. Okay, enjoy the show. Anyone else have a question, comment, or topic for tonight? Okay, if you can kind of, because I can barely make out the, I think your suffix was BBI?
Yes, my name is Eddie. Hello, Charlie, two brothers to India. If my signal's not good, I'll just listen. Thank you.
Okay, Eddie. Okay, let's go with John. John, what do you got for us tonight?
Yeah, good evening, Roy. Good evening, Matt. Roy is always, I speak for a lot of people, enjoy that AI conversation in the front of the net. That was a nice caveat you added to it, to the net. My question is, I was having the once-a-month breakfast with the Citrus County radio club, and one gentleman there, he's a very knowledgeable guy. He actually builds toroids and for a ham radio balance, etc. And he was discussing the placement of a toroid coil choke along the coax cable with another gentleman, and he said something I found interesting. He said that it's better to put the choke closer to the antenna, which, yeah, we all know why, that's where the problem is starting. But what he said was, but the problem is that the closer that you put the choke to the antenna, you also lose, I forgot the word, but what he said was the antenna looks to create a balance, like on a dipole, one end radiates and the other one is your ground plane, and that it will use part of the coax as a ground, as a ground plane. And when you put the choke close to the antenna, it loses that ability. Now, I never thought of it in that way, but it sounds logical to me. I know what antenna theory, nobody really knows. You know, we all surmise, and we got to put forth certain thoughts as, try to make some things we can hang on to. I always believed that that premise, looking at it differently, was true, that when you're tuning the antenna, it would use part of the coax as a part of the a reflector. Now, what are your thoughts on that part right there?
Okay. It depends upon the antenna, obviously. A centipede dipole doesn't need another counterpoise. It's a balanced antenna by design. If you have something like, say, an NFED half-wave, it requires, even though we sort of say that it doesn't need a counterpoise, it doesn't need a long counterpoise. It needs some kind of a counterpoise to optimize its function as a radiating antenna. And coaxial cables carry two different kinds of currents. We've mentioned that repeatedly. The differential current does not radiate, but counterpoise is shielded and goes straight up to the antenna. A common mode, which is the current running instead of on the on the center wire and the inner aspect of the shield. The common mode occurs on the inner aspect of the shield and the outer aspect of the shield. And in common mode, it's not properly shielded, and so it can radiate. And so it's effectively an additional portion of your antenna, even though you think of it as your transmission line, just getting the power up to your antenna and down. So in that case, the length of coax transmission line that is not yet RF blocked with a toroid or something like that determines the extent of the of an additional piece of wire that's radiating your RF. So that's what's going on. If you take a half wave NFET and you choke it all the way at the antenna feed point, it's very probable that you'll cut off the required short amount of effective counterpoise and make it a far less effective antenna. So it's not particularly ground plane. It's just think of it as a counterpoise. Think of it as an invisible counterpoise. There are antenna designs where you play around with part of the shielding of a coax cable so that, you know, a portion of it is just one leg of a dipole and the other is operating in common mode as the other end of the dipole. But a lot of antennas use a portion of unchoked coaxial cable as a means to deal with the additional, you know, to balance an unbalanced antenna with a counterpoise.
You're fast keying, Roy.
Sorry.
KD2VHD.
Yes, Jim?
Thank you, Roy. Jim, KD2VHD. I've been pondering this question for quite some time, and I've been wondering, how is a half-wave NFED with a counterpoise not just a offset-to-fed dipole? Is there some distinction between those two things that is important, or am I missing something in the concept?
AC2DS. So it's a matter of extreme. It's an extremely off-center dipole. Say again?
I said, okay, I'll have to go with that answer for now.
Well, yeah, I mean, effectively, that's what's going on. If you have a center-fed dipole, you have the lowest possible impedance of 50, or approximately 35 to 50 ohms. And as you slide it to one end, the impedance gets higher and higher and higher, and one leg gets shorter and shorter and shorter. So at the extreme end of that type of a concept, you're left with a one-sided, very off-center and with an extremely high impedance of, you know, 3,000 ohms and such. And so it's just a matter of degree. The farther along the off-center, you know, going towards one of the ends, the closer you end up with effectively an NFED half-wave.
Just pointed such an concept, but I'm out at the fringes of my ability to grasp it. So thank you for answering. Back to that.
Okay, back to you, John.
Yeah, I was remiss not to mention they were talking about a vertical. But you just said something that made me think of antenna theory a little different now. I have always thought of the common mode currents as just being an unwanted byproduct of the mismatch. which, you know, I mean, I'm still holding to that. I guess they are. But I never thought of the common mode currents actually being used as a radiator, as a reflector. And I believe that's what you said, which is, you know, very interesting. Just makes me look at it a little differently. So I'm pretty sure I heard you what you said, and is that just wanted to confirm it with you. Seems the common mode is pretty much always present there then. It's just to what degree, and it does serve some sort of purpose to balance the antenna. Would you agree with that?
Well, as long as you limit yourself to not talking too much about balanced antennas, any imbalanced antenna is most likely going to provide you with reflective common mode. Now, I wouldn't, you keep occasionally throwing in the idea that it's a reflector. It's not a reflector. The reflectors are elements usually seen in Yagis. They're parasitic elements. They're not in wire. They're not connected to the circuit as a separate parasitic element that absorbs and then reflects the electromagnetic with a phase disruption dependent upon its relative length to the wavelength of the transmission. So it's not really a reflector. It's more of a, you know, a radio or you know, just an extra piece of wire, but it's attached to the antenna system. It's not a totally isolated parasitic element.
Yeah, no, I'm very clear on that, on what a reflector and the purpose and the function on a Yagi is. Part of the problem with this antenna theory, and I had this discussion briefly with Dick, and I actually said to him, you know, if he could explain it, and this is where the confusion is, even when I asked this question and in your response. I said that these terms are used sort of interchangeably and universally, you know, a mirror image. Reflection, counterpoise. You know, we're using so many different terms for the same thing. So, not talking about a reflector as in a dipole. I'm sorry, as in a Yagi, but calling it then a mirror image, I guess, or you know, if you, you know, that term makes it more clear. But would you agree with that? Then the common, if I'm you're just making me look at the common modes as a different entity in a way, and I just wanted to clear it up if that's what you think. And I'm just going to repeat it. The common modes are always present in some degree. I've always just thought of them, and they are as an unwanted entity. And the degree to which they exist is the degree to which there is a mismatch with the antenna there. And that they do try to they do perform some sort of a service. This service, yes, putting that aside, but a service of creating a mirror image. I know I don't want to get confused with reflectors and Yagis. No. Would you agree with that?
I guess to a degree, the problem is physics is rife with very poorly chosen words, and words that sound identical but mean different things. We do this all the time when people will ask the question about grounding, because the RF grounding is not the same as electrical utility grounding, is not the same as another form of grounding. So physics especially is rife with these problems. Some antennas experience a lot more common mode reflections than others, and some types of antennas actually benefit from what we usually find as detrimental in common mode. So as far as, say, a poor man's counterpoise, you can simply use the transmission line with an RF choke to limit the length of the given is an example of actually common mode being beneficial in some cases. Like all things, they're not always detrimental. In some cases, things that are detrimental in one situation can actually turn out to be helpful in others. And that's the case for a lot of unbalanced antennas, where you do not want to dedicate your own separate counterpoise, and you want to use the transmission line as a counterpoise. In order to get the right length that you want, you need to choke it to at a certain point so that its common mode current it becomes cut off, and then that's the length of the given counterpoise for that antenna design.
Okay, very good. You agreed with that, so that okay, that's good. And yes, that and like I said, I had that discussion with Dick. I asked him to explain it because you brought up that other term, counterpoise. It's referred to in one book as a counterpoise. It's referred to in another book as a reflection. It's referred to in another book as a mirror image. If there was just one agreed upon term, it would. And like you said, with grounding, it does. It gets very. We're sort of at a deficit with the jargon and in this field here. But okay, thank you as always, Roy. Again, your answer made me think about the common mode differently, just like this gentleman over breakfast. Got me thinking of the common mode differently, and that's what it does. It sparks thought, and from that, that's always a good thing. So AC2GS, November 2, Zulu Charlie, back to net.
Okay, very good, John. Thank you for participating. Always a pleasure. Chris, what do you got tonight?
Thanks, Roy. K2SBP. Hopefully this is easy. It should be easy, I think. You guys, anyway. And maybe Paul knows the answer if you don't. And I'm telling you both do. We had this Artemis spacecraft come back, of course. Everyone knows. I'm sure Paul is talking about it. A question we thought about, and in particular with this spacecraft, watching it come in, I was watching it very closely, and I've always wondered how this works. When they are doing a re-entry, as Artemis did, and they have that triangular, let's call shaped spacecraft, with the large part of the triangle, the flat side, facing down with the heat shield on it, of course, and they're coming in 25,000 miles an hour, and they start hitting the atmosphere, which is almost nothing in the beginning, and builds and builds and builds until it's, full air. As we all know, if you fly in an aircraft, when you fly in, it bounces around a lot, and the control surfaces on the aircraft, they're constantly straightening the aircraft out to keep it flat. Most people don't even notice it, but it's going on constantly. Because the air has different densities, different temperature, it's all kind of things going on. And you go through the jet stream. Lots of things can redirect the aircraft, and the surfaces change to flatten out the air so you are comfortable. And the question I have is, how the heck does these re-entry vehicles do that? Letting it drop there for a second, timed out on my radio, but how do these re-entry vehicles stay in the right direction coming in through the atmosphere the way they do? What keeps it from just hitting a pocket of heavy air and start tumbling and flipping around? I don't understand how they keep it that way. And is it some kind of aerodynamics built into this thing, or is it... Do they also have some control surfaces on it they're manipulating, or the computers are? Or are they actually using thrusters, little tiny thrusters around, keeping it that way? What am I missing? How do they keep these things from just flipping and rolling around and burning it up in the atmosphere? K2STV.
Okay, that's an interesting question. I mean, I would assume aerodynamic design and more passive control. I can't perceive of the amount of energy you would need to expend to really significantly modify the pathway of your fall. But we got an expert here anyway. So, Paul, you want to give your 2 cents worth?
Chris is right on all of the above, you know, with the design of this craft. There is one side of the craft is a little, you might say, heavier than the other side, you know, when they design it. And that keeps it from rolling, you know, more or less. But as it's coming through the atmosphere, the reaction control system built into that Orion spacecraft, they have 12 thrusters that are constantly firing, you know, one way or another, to try to keep the speed of the spacecraft, a certain pre-programmed way, and that's all being controlled by the computer. Could the pilot take over? Yeah, they could. But which one is better? The computer is better. That's firing these. I mean, if you could see the reaction control jets firing, they're like firing like all the time as they're coming through the atmosphere. But that, in this case, it was 8 minutes. The service module was separated as over 30 reaction control jets, and those, of course, are used during flight and all. The only time these things are used, the 12 on the Orion, is when they're coming through the atmosphere. So they have their own little tanks for that fuel, and separate from the service module. You might have heard them talking about Metropolis. That leak was in the helium system that pressurized the hydrazine and the nitrogen trioxide, which is used for reaction control system on the service module. So that leak had nothing to do with the spacecraft itself. So this thing was completely independent, flying through the atmosphere. And if later on I was going to talk about the heat shield itself, temperatures and everything, but I guess we could do that later. Anyway, back to you, Chris.
Interesting. So it sounds like it's a combination of aerodynamics because of the heavy bottom which wants to face the direction it's going, of course, and the thrusters. It's just amazing. What's amazing to me is they never mention that or talk about it. It's almost talked about and shown as it's just fallen to the earth, which of course it is, but without any kind of control. What bothers me for years about this is more about the space shuttle, because of the way it used to come in likewise, basically, which is aerodynamically the worst possible